Thank you to everyone for coming out this Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock in Spanish Fork. Thanks to those who download these talks as podcasts from iTunes. You're welcome to give us your correspondence, feedback. My email is at utahchristianist@gmail.com. We also have a membership class online. We'd like to thank those that have become members. We couldn't do what we do without your help and support. Everything is inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Sometimes we start out with a little joke just to get your creative juices flowing. So I heard about this couple. They were 60 years old and they celebrated 40 years of marriage. They'd just gotten back from a yard sale and they had this little lamp and they were polishing it and a genie came out. He said, "I'll give you one wish each." So the lady, 60-year-old lady, she said, "Well, I wish that we may have many more years together and we go on vacations and trips and we continue to enjoy each other's company." But it came time for the man and he said, "Honey," he said, "I'm really sorry. I know you're going to feel betrayed, but I'm going to wish to be married to a woman 30 years younger." There was a puff of smoke and he was 90 years old. Today we'd like to talk about something that elderly gentleman was unable to do, which is to control your mind. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's song of God, he says that the mind can be your best friend if it's under control, if you control your mind. It can be your worst enemy if you allow others to control your mind. When people talk about mind control, to know whether that's good or bad, we have to know whether it's me that's in control of my mind or I'm allowing other influences, other factors to control my mind. The ideal is that I should control my mind and help it get me to where I need to go in life. I heard that we talk to ourselves. Our mind talks to us, says things to us up to 30,000 times a day. So I'd like to encourage us all today to take inventory of what it is that we're telling each other. Worry means that you're telling yourself the wrong things. You're meditating, you're focusing upon the wrong things, temporal things. If you go through your day worried about your finances, you're worried about your health, you're worried about your family, you're worried about your future, it means that you're allowing the wrong thoughts in, and that will stress you out, that will shorten your life. You'll become anxious, fearful, negative, discouraged. So the whole focus, the whole fulcrum of this is choosing what it is that we meditate upon. Imagine your mind has a doorway to it, and you have the choice of letting in whoever you want. Now, you don't just let anyone into your house who knocks on the door. You part the curtains, you look through the peephole, and you make a decision. Are they going to enrich my life? Are they going to add to my life and my relationships? Or are they just going to gossip? Are they going to complain? Are they going to sell me something I don't need? So you have the choice either to open the door and invite them in and to be in their company, or to keep the door closed and not to invite them in. So when negative thoughts come knocking at the door, and they do for all of us, we have a choice, nevertheless, whether to let them in or not. We're not saying to stick your head in the sand and not be aware of things, not know what's going on in the world, not listen to the news, but we're saying don't read the newspaper cover to cover. Don't listen to the whole news report. Don't dwell on it. Don't let it consume you. Don't let it steal your joy. And today there's a lot of doom and gloom. Everywhere we look, we see that the economy's down. One phrase that you've probably heard a few times even in your young lifetimes is, there's total panic in the marketplace. There's total fear in the marketplace. So if we allow that to infect us and we start thinking in that way, we'll start also being influenced by fear. So let's not shut ourselves off from what's going on around us, but let's also not let it get the better of us. Let's exercise the positive option of listening to the good, wholesome reports that are there in the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that all living entities are His parts and parcels. We are offsprings of the Lord of Lords who created millions of universes. We have divine blood in us. We have divine DNA, RNA. And if we put Him first place in our lives and synchronize our energies and our thoughts and our words with His purposes in the world, there's nothing that can come against us that can hold us back from the destiny that He has in mind for us. He says that whatever He's endowed us with, whatever talents and abilities, in the service of Him, He will preserve those, and whatever we lack, He will make up for that lack. Prabhupada, the spiritual master of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, he didn't even start out on his life's mission until he was 70 years old, the time when most people are hanging it up, you know, taking their gold watch home to retire. He came across the ocean on a berth in a steamship that was given to him, donated to him free of charge. He had two heart attacks on the way over. When he arrived, it was in the middle of winter. He had no money. He didn't know anybody. But yet Krishna, nevertheless, preserved what he had, and he made up for what he lacked. That some or other young people were attracted to his message and to his persona, and he had ended up starting a worldwide spiritual movement. We're one of 500 temples now. So Krishna says, Eko bahanam yovidadati kamam. I, the singular eternal living entity, supply the plural eternal living entities all that they need in their life. So we meditate upon these kinds of statements. Krishna says to Arjuna, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. That we're created, we're manufactured, not out of matter. We're not temporal, material beings of dirt and flesh and bone and blood. But we, the inhabitants of this material body, are divine. We're sparks from God, who is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. So you can't meditate, you can't ruminate on these thoughts without brightening up, without getting a better outlook, without throwing off the negativity and the defeatism, without understanding that I needn't worry about my job because my job is not my source. I needn't worry about my finances because my finances are not the source. I needn't worry about the economy because the economy is not my source. My source is God, who created everything. And if I'm connected to God, it doesn't matter what the external circumstances are, I'm still going to prosper. Our methodology for making that connection is chanting. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. God is absolute, and that means that He and His name are non-different. In the relative world, if you say water, 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 you'll still be thirsty because the name water and the substance are two different things. But in the absolute platform, if you say any bona fide name of God, whether it be Krishna or Allah or Emmanuel or Jehovah, God is personally present within that name and you're hooked up. This is actually yoga. Yoga means yoke. So we most easily yoke with God by saying His holy names and having Him dance on the tip of our tongue. When we do that, we're compared to a tree that's planted right next to a raging river. Now the whole land for hundreds or maybe even thousands of miles around is parched, hasn't had rain for years and years, everything's dried up, everything's turned into dust, but none of that affects the tree that's planted right next to the raging river. It blooms, it blossoms, it produces fruit in season, irrespective of what the overall circumstances are. So we don't have to worry about losing our job, we don't have to worry about the economy. Those things may happen. God never promises that if we chant His holy names there won't be challenges in our life. But He promises that He'll use them for good and He'll get us through, and if we stay in faith, we'll come out better. So none of us know what the future holds, but that should not be a cause for stress and anxiety if we know who holds the future in His hands. Our trust should be in Him. Brief story, 500 years ago, there was a Muslim-born saint named Haridas Thakur. He adopted the process of chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari. And some people from the Muslim community thought that those were Hindu names of God. And they objected to this Muslim-born person chanting the, quote, Hindu names of God. So one fellow, his name was Ramachandra Khan. He was the local in charge for the Muslims under the governor. He conspired with a lady of the night to approach Haridas Thakur, who was a young man, in the evening with all perfume and unguents and all, and to try to seduce him. And she agreed. And he promised that if she was successful, he would give her gold and jewels, he would give her own house, he would give her any amount of material goods. So she approached Haridas Thakur on three successive nights, but instead of her being seducing him, he seduced her, you might say. He seduced her into chanting the holy names of the Lord. And she ended up, on his advice, giving up all of her jewels and all of her bangles and her profession and replacing him on the dais. He went some other place and she stayed and sat in the very place where he had sat, and she chanted the names of the Lord. And not only was she not provided for by the Lord, because of her checkered past, you might say, she became famous all over the known world at that time. Sometimes people say your test becomes your testimony. So she would not paradoxically have been nearly as effective in bringing people to the process of chanting the holy names had she had the vanilla past of an ordinary suburban. So it was her very past that actually increased her fame, and people came to visit her from hundreds of miles. They brought gifts, they brought offerings, and not only did she have more than enough to maintain herself, but she gave away and supported a number of charities as well. Meantime, the Khan, the Ramachandra Khan, he had an audit done by the governor. The governor discovered that he had been cheating him. And not only was all of his goods confiscated, but he and his family members were thrown into jail. So the moral of the story is, what I'm trying to say is that we'll never be let down if we trust in God. Anything else that we put our faith in, anything else that we lean on, whether it be our bank balance, our family, and not that these things aren't important, but they're not going to hold up in the storms of life. If we learn to transfer our trust in Him, wean ourselves from trusting our job or the economy, He created everything, and when we meditate upon that, and we meditate upon His promises and not on the various problems that present themselves before us, then we'll feel total joy instead of total fear. I don't know whether you agree with me or not, but in my experience, meditating on problems has never, ever made them better. Have you had that experience that worrying about a problem ever makes it better? For me, it makes it worse. So why don't we try an experiment? If meditating on problems doesn't make it better, it makes it worse, then why don't we try to meditate on some of the things that God says about us? Why don't we change what it is that we're dwelling on? Instead of being full of fear and anxiety and trepidation about what might happen, why don't we dwell on the fact that God says He has us all in the palm of His hand? He says that all things work together for our good. He says that problems don't come to stay, problems come to pass. He never promises us a pass on the difficulties of life, but He does say He'll get us through them. Now here is a picture of a man. Can you all see this? This is Prabhupada. Smiling, right? Happy guy. This is a smile of someone who came to America. He's got 5,000 disciples. He's got 100 temples. He's got vehicles. The chanting of Hare Krishna is ringing all over the world. He's accomplished everything that he wanted to accomplish, right? This is a smile of that person, right? Wrong. These are pictures of him taken when he first arrived in America. He had nothing. He had no money. He had no friends. It's in the middle of winter. He's practically a homeless person. But you see what his thoughts are. You see that he has not allowed the circumstances to affect him. But he's thinking success, he's thinking increase, he's thinking victory, he's thinking promotion. And so all you have to do is have seen him in that at that point in time and know that he would be successful. Because success starts in our thoughts. It doesn't start in what happens. It starts in the attitude that we bring to the endeavor. So this is when he had every reason to be depressed and forlorn. Oh, I'm here, I'm an old man, I'm past the prime of my life. I'm in a foreign land. I don't know the culture. It's the 60s. These kids are all wearing buttons. It says, don't trust anyone over 30. Question authority. They're all meat eaters. They're all taking drugs. They're all promiscuous. And my teaching teaches otherwise. What possible chance do I have of success? But he didn't meditate on all those negatives and difficulties. He just thought that I'm doing the work of the Lord. I'm giving the medicine by which people can be free of birth, death, disease, and old age, and surely people of substance will accept that. So he learned the art of thinking himself happy, thinking himself peaceful, and putting himself in a better mood. So my proposal to us today is, let's take our thinking, our thought life, to a higher level. Let's arise in our thinking. Instead of thinking that our best days are behind us, let's start thinking that our best days are yet to come. Let's start thinking that something big, big opportunities, big connections, big promotions are in our way. And what appears right now to be for my harm, ultimately, if I stay in faith and don't get disconcerted by it, it will be to my advantage. Let's think I'm strong, I'm healthy, I'm blessed. The key is, don't ever start a new day of your life in neutral. When you're awakening in the morning and you're lying in bed, before you get up, before you read the newspaper, before you turn on the TV, don't ask yourself, what's the day going to be like?
Don't start in neutral. If you don't make a decision before the day starts and set your mind in the right direction, Maya, our old enemy of illusion, she will set our mind for us. This is what I was talking about, mind control. Now, are you going to control your mind, or is your mind going to be controlled by the circumstances? So before your day starts, before you say, how do I feel? What's happening in the world? What's going on in the stock market? You make a pre-decision before you get out of bed that you're going to have a great, great day. And how you start your day sets your tone for the whole day. Your life will follow your thoughts. If our thought life goes something like this, nothing good ever happens to me. I never get any breaks. I'll never get out of debt. I'm too old now to meet the girl or boy of my dreams. Then you're going to become what you believe. Your faith is working, but it's working in a negative way. So why not take that same powerhouse of the mind and your faith and make it work to bring positive things into your life, to make things true? Faith can work in the right direction. It can also work in the wrong direction. So we're asking you today to put your faith in what God says about you. Plant your faith in fertile soil, and it will produce very, very wonderful, amazing results. You'll be up when the economy is down. You'll be thriving when others are struggling to survive. You'll be going over while others are going under. When others are having total fear, you'll have total peace. When you're singing a song of praise, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, others will be complaining. I remember when I was a new devotee about 40 years ago, someone handed me a copy of the New Yorker magazine, and there was a cartoon in there. It was a lady, I guess she'd met some devotee somewhere or heard about chanting, and she was trying to convince her husband to chant. So she was leaning over the breakfast table saying to him, chant, chant, chant. And with just as much energy and just as much conviction, he was coming right back at her saying, can't, can't, can't. Well, my proposal is to you, we've been doing can't, can't, we've done that, we've been there, so try something else. Instead of can't, 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 why don't you try chant, chant, chant? I don't think that you have anything to lose and you have a lot to gain. So when you meditate upon Krishna's words and take His name on the tip of your tongue, you'll always be in blossom. You'll never be drawing in negative. You'll never be drawing in defeatism. One lady, she bought a ficus plant at Home Depot. And as she was taking it out into her car in the parking lot, the thought just came into her mind from nowhere, this tree's going to die. She didn't know where it came. It had no basis. The tree looked perfectly healthy. She took it home, she fertilized it, she watered it, she took all good care of it, but she couldn't get rid of that thought that the tree is going to die. And sure enough, a few weeks later, the tree died. So she went to her husband, she said, honey, he said, you know, since I bought this tree, I just had this nagging thought that I couldn't get rid of that the tree was going to die. I wonder, do you think there's any possibility that I actually killed the tree by negatively thinking about it? And the husband said, I don't know about that, honey, but I sure hope that you're thinking positively about me. And here's a thought for you. If you allow negative thoughts to enter into your mind, there'll be no room for positive things. When those negative thoughts and defeatism and lack of self-esteem and confidence come knocking, they need to see a no vacancy sign. Or if they've been living in you, you need to serve them an eviction notice. I heard about an apartment complex where they rented out. 80% of the people were petty criminals and drug pushers and addicts. Well, what happened to the 20% of law-abiding people? What do you think? They didn't stay, did they? They found somewhere else to live. So similarly, we can't accommodate negative, defeating things and expect joy, peace, promotion, confidence to be also existing. They'll find somewhere else to live. By the same token, if 80%, if the majority of what you choose to let in the doorway through the door of your mind is positive, uplifting, a good vision for the future, then the negative thoughts will also wither up and dry away. So guard the doorways of our mind. The home is a place where I live, and every one of us has a right, a duty to guard it against those who would do us ill. Quit renting out space in our mind to our problems. We only have so much space in the mind. So it cannot accommodate self-pity, and it cannot accommodate thoughts of can't do it. At the same time, have faith, joy, peace, and healing. So serve eviction notices to all those negatives. Again, I'm not saying to deny what's going on in the world, all the negative reports. Just don't let them consume you. When we first proposed the idea in Los Angeles of building a temple in Utah, we'd lived in Los Angeles for 10 years, and we had this idea of acquiring some property. A radio station was available for sale with 5 acres of land, and we sort of asked a few people about it in the area. And Los Angeles, we just came back from Los Angeles. We did a Festival of Colors there on Saturday. It was very successful. And it's kind of an irony that we're coming out of Utah to do a Festival of Colors in Los Angeles. I mean, we're doing it, not the LA Temple. So things kind of came full circle. And I couldn't help but think when we first broached the subject, many, many of our co-religionists were very, very negative about it. They said, Utah? What do you want to go to Utah for? What's in Utah? You know, and in those days, in the 80s, there was a t-shirt that was quite popular in Los Angeles. You'd see it pop up here and there. It said, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you might be in Utah. But you have to always remember that God gave you a dream for your life. He didn't give it to someone else. He's not going to tell someone else something that he's not going to tell you about what to do for your life. So always solicit opinion. Take advice. We're not saying not to. But at the same time, realize that God gave you that dream and you have to be true to that and not let some other person talk you out of it. We may hear negative reports. We may hear all the reasons why it won't work out. We may have all kinds of critics. But in the end, we've got to be true to the vision that God planted in our heart. And we may have to choose to ignore them. People don't determine our destiny. Krishna or God determines our destiny. So let's get in agreement with God and not let distractions take us off course. If we do that, Krishna will get us to where we need to be. The first place we lose victory in our lives is in our thinking. The whole key is what's going on in your thought life. So make a decision with me today to keep your thoughts fixed on what God says. You're going to become what you believe. Get up in the morning and set your mind in the right direction. Meditate not on the problems, but meditate on the promises. Learn to think yourself happy. Learn to think yourself peaceful, to think yourself victorious. If you will get in this habit, you will overcome every obstacle, defeat every enemy, and become everything that Krishna intended for you to be. So thank you very much. And if you'd like to chat with me, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.